Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CracksSidewalks.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast on Cracked Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you to talk about the first week of Big East play. And boy, Phil, we saw the good and the bad from Marquette this week with a really rough win at Creighton, but a heck of a win at home on Saturday.
Yeah, boy, we need to take some mood stabilizers or some, you know, some Dramamine from all the wild swings. I don't know what it was, but heck of a week.
Yeah, I guess all things considered, probably a week we could have expected, maybe not the margin of victory either way, but a loss to Creighton and a win to Villanova is about what the odds makers and the predictive metrics had for Marquette this week. So we're going to look at those two games and also look ahead to the two coming up this week on Tuesday and Saturday against Providence and Seton Hall. But Phil, kind of go back to what I just said, though. We saw the good and the bad, so you want to start with the good or the bad?
Let's get the bad out of the way. I always like to finish on a happy note.
Okay, that's all good then. You know, so the Creighton game went about as poorly as it could have possibly gone. Really, the game was really never all that competitive. It was pretty much a layup line for Creighton, and Creighton was hitting shots all day, whether it was inside or outside. Marquette never really got anything going, and boy, there was a lot of anxiety after that loss to Creighton.
Yeah, I mean, Marquette didn't look good at all. I mean, they almost looked bad enough that you're like, there is no way this is how Marquette is, right? Like, it just seemed in the moment an outlier, but yeah, there was a lot of anxiety and angst, especially among the online community, about how Marquette performed. And I think, quite frankly, just looking at that game, I think, I would not put it all on coaching. I think Marquette got outcoached and outplayed across the board. It was just a poor performance altogether.
It was just kind of steamrolled, which was a fear I had going in. Almost with any road game in the Big East, I'm going to feel that way, because if you start slow, if Marquette's shots aren't falling, then it could get away from you fairly quickly. And it did it ever against Creighton. I mean, I think the biggest thing was Marquette was not able to play its bigs as much as it is used to. Theo John did not have a great game. We now know that his hand is hurting him to bad enough that he's going to need surgery as soon as the season's over. He said that after the game on Saturday. Ed Morrow was in there. He didn't have a great game. Jace Johnson hardly played. I guess Marquette was never comfortable going small against Creighton until it was far too late.
Yeah, it was really the defense was the atrocious part. I mean, some of it you can say was garbage time, but Marquette scored 75 points and had nearly a point per possession. So I don't know how much of the problem was the offense, but yeah, the defense was Theo John, and I thought Paint Touches did a really nice article on just Theo John had no answer and was getting dragged out to the perimeter and was slow to rotate back, and that's what allowed all of the points in the paint from Creighton, to the point that Wojo's adjustment was to nail Theo John to the bench. And some of that was his offense. He had a number of turnovers, but it was just like a combination of poor performance and perhaps, you know, not timely adjustments from the coaching staff. Though I mean, they did eventually go small and they tried to fuel a mini comeback to start the second half, and then Creighton turned it back on. So I other than a 2-3 zone, which we can talk about a little bit if we want, but I'm not really sure what else Wojo was supposed to do there.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to say now, but next time we see Creighton, would you like to see more of a zone?
I do think I would like to see some attempts to go to 2-3 zone. A one, because again, we Creighton's outside shooting hurt, but they were, like you said, a layup line. So I'd like to see our big staying under the hoop against Creighton, and I think a 2-3 allows us to do that. So I would definitely like to see us try it. But I don't know. Wojo just seems to have a, you know, a pent-up hatred for the 2-3 zone. Like, it's just not something he likes to do.
Yeah. Yeah, he never really has. And sometimes he does die a little inside and goes with it. And it works for stretches. And then, you know, guys get lost on it sometimes. And it kind of goes away. And then we never see it again. But, yeah, just things just never really felt right against Creighton. Once you got too late in the second half, it's like, well, and like at the time, and maybe I feel a little differently after the Villanova game, but I had a big concern that every time Marquette had a quad one opponent, they not only lost, but got blown out. Any concern on your part, Phil, that some of Marquette's losses are so one-sided?
Well, I would
say all of Marquette's losses are one-sided, but they do have some quality wins as well.
Yeah, it is a trend, to be sure. I think, you know, quoting other sources, I think Anonymous Eagle had a good article about just the sheer number of not only double digit, but, you know, 20 plus point losses in the Wojo era. It's hard to explain, right? I think it just comes down to that when Marquette is outclassed in a particular game, they are really outclassed. And it has a tendency towards, you know, maybe it's a matchup problem, but it can also be a, you know, poor shooting night plus, you know, players are having off nights, whatever. It just seems to it seems to come in combination, and then the team doesn't have an answer to rally. I don't know. How do you explain all these multi-digit losses?
Yeah, I'm really not sure. Cause, I mean, I guess, you know, the lazy analysis is to say when they get behind by that much, they give up. But I don't think that's necessarily fair to say. But I do think maybe it's more, I don't know, maybe sometimes when they really get surprised like that, they just never recover and never regroup and mentally. And I don't know. I really don't know how to explain it, honestly. I'm just kind of speculating and spitballing here. Do they just not settle down, or, you know, is there nothing you can say in the huddle to fix it, and it just snowballs out of control and say, well, this is a loss. It's definitely going to be a loss. But, you know, I don't know how many times when you get down 15 points you're supposed to win anyway. But yeah, just it's only been three times this season, to be fair. But it's just that when they have lost, they've really gotten hammered. And I hope that doesn't continue too much, because when they, you know, it comes to seeding time, that's going to be a big negative when it comes to net rankings.
Yeah, well, I guess we don't really know how much of an impact it has on the net ratings, but yeah, I mean, it's especially quad one losses by double digits. I don't see that trend continuing. Like, I don't think every loss we have is going to be by significant double digits. I could be totally wrong, and that would be interesting. I don't even know what it tells you, though, right? Like,
yeah, I don't know what to make of it either. Just kind of throwing it out there because people, it's just something that people have noticed.
Right.
That, you know, whether, you know, even going back to, you know, last season, the Murray State game, and I'm trying to think if there are some other, like, blowout losses late in the season last year. Maybe not that many. I mean, most of the losses late last season were kind of heartbreakers, honestly. But, yeah, I guess maybe it's just more of a thing with this team. And, you know, they've had some non-conference games that have gone pretty horribly the past couple years. But, I don't know. It may be more of a fluke than a trend, I think. But something I'll keep in mind. It's something that I think I'm going to be monitoring the next time they're down, like, 10 in the second half. Say, well, is this going to be another blowout, or are they going to kind of chip away at this thing and try to at least make it interesting? But I got that's really most of what I took away from the Creighton game. And, you know, I think all of Marquette Nation would be in a bit more of a panic mode this week if it wasn't for the glorious win against Villanova on Saturday, which was just, I don't know, to some maybe more surprising than how bad the Creighton game got. Marquette was just totally in control in that first half. And it maybe got a little sloppy in the second half, but I mean, the win was really never in doubt on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I think the win was a kind of a whistle-to-whistle type of victory, right? Like you said, there was probably some time around the 10-minute mark, even though the KenPom probability of win metric wouldn't necessarily agree. It did probably around the 10-minute mark or even the 8-minute mark. There was a little bit of a question, but that was mostly because Marquette's offense hadn't scored for 7 minutes straight, which is always disconcerting. But then when you looked up, the offense hadn't scored in 7 minutes, and Marquette still had a 12 or a 10-point lead. That means your defense, one, that you did a lot to build up that lead, build up a significant lead, and two, that your defense is continuing to perform. And I think that's the big takeaway. The first half had just, I mean, in a nutshell, that first half is what I was hoping I would see from Marquette on a very consistent basis, game in, game out, right? That was, I think, the quintessential Marquette performance. The second half, the offense kind of went away, but the defense was still there. So if we can get one of the two at that kind of level consistently every game, I think we'll be all right.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing, that was Marquette's worst three-point shooting game of the season.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's been the bread and butter all year has been Marquette's three-point shooting. They only shot 5 of 21 as a team, about 23.8%. And you would think if they couldn't hit threes against Villanova that it could be a long day. But they were able to do pretty much everything else. They were able to get to the rim. They were able to get to the free throw line. That's where Marcus Howard really did most of his damage, which was getting the line and getting free throws. And Villanova just never looked like itself. Like, that's why I was like, never the win was never in doubt for me. It's just, like, even when Marquette was struggling, I never thought Villanova was clicking. Villanova missed a ton of shots as well. And they just weren't sharp.
Right. Yeah, you're right. You kind of felt like, okay, well, real Villanova is going to show up one of these minutes, and then we're going to be in trouble. How much of that do you attribute to Villanova having an off night, and how much do you attribute to Marquette having a good game plan and good adjustments?
I think maybe I'd lean a little more of the latter. You know, you talked about the foul trouble on the last podcast, and fouls were certainly an issue. I mean, you know, Gillespie fouled out. Swider finished the game with 4. Sadiq Bey had to sit for a good chunk of the game with 4 fouls. You know, their superstar freshman, Antoine, he had 4 fouls. So I think, yeah, maybe that had hurt Villanova's rhythm a little bit, and maybe they didn't get the kind of spacing they wanted on offense, didn't get enough clean looks from 3. They were, you know, Marquette wasn't great from 3, but Villanova was almost just as bad. I mean, both teams shot just a shade under 24% from the game. From 3, Villanova was 9 of 38. So, yeah, I think Marquette did a nice job. I don't know if the plan was necessarily to exactly get guys in foul trouble or if it was just to be aggressive and just try to get points in the paint. But whatever it was, it certainly worked out, and Villanova just never looked comfortable. And so I think you got to give the coaching staff credit there. And, you know, it noted that, you know, Ed Morrow didn't play a ton. He only played 7 minutes. And, of course, Jace Johnson didn't even see the floor. And maybe that was kind of an adjustment from the Creighton game, that thinking, look, when a team goes small, it's probably not going to work out for us. And that was just not a game where Jace Johnson was going to be able to contribute. I'm sure he'll contribute more in future Big East games, but I think kind of leaving him on the bench worked to Marquette's advantage, getting more minutes for, you know, other guys that were able to kind of keep up with what Villanova wanted to do.
Yeah, well, I agree. I think I wouldn't read anything too negative into the Jace Johnson DNP. I think it was just a bad matchup. But I also think it should be pointed out with full credit, you know, Theo John went from playing essentially his season low minutes in 8 minutes against Creighton, where he was clearly outmatched and not performing well, to a nearly a season high against Villanova in 33 minutes. He had 34 minutes against Purdue. And I think it just goes to show you that if Theo John is at the top of his game, that he's kind of, especially defensively, kind of the straw that stirs the drink. I think one of the key adjustments the staff made that we hadn't seen, and again, I only bring it up to point out that, you know, hey, they actually do some coaching over there. But Theo was kind of playing a roving doubler from time to time. Anytime, you know, Earl or Bay, typically sometimes Swider, got the ball in the post or the mid-range, Theo would all of a sudden come over and double and force them to try and pass it out and stuff. And that's not a defensive look I've seen from them. And so I thought it was pretty smart coaching, because it never let the Villanova bigs get comfortable.
Yeah, they had 7 blocks on the game as opposed to just 1 in the Creighton game. Marquette's team, you know, block percentage numbers are pretty good compared to the rest of the country. They're what, 12%? That's top. That's 56 in the country as I'm looking on KenPom. You know, they had the game against Villanova, their block percentage was 23%. So when you have that intimidation, including four blocks from Theo, so when you have that intimidation factor in the middle, it changes what the other team wants to do, and a team maybe that is used to getting points in the paint may not go in there as much. Jeremiah Robinson Earl never really got going. Sadiq Bey, you know, he had 9 points. You know, they were not able to get easy buckets at the rim as much as they wanted to, and they chucked up 38 threes and only made 9 of them. So, yeah, I think Marquette kind of forced Villanova to play the way they would have preferred, and maybe the final scores, maybe that's probably right around where Marquette wants to play, in the 70s, I guess. And, you know, Villanova was held to 60. So, yeah, it was, they had a good game plan, and I think they executed pretty well. And I think we've seen, again, about as bad as it can be for Marquette in Big East play, and about as good as it can be in Big East play, at least for a half. You know, that second half is probably a little sloppy, but that first half was about as good as it could get for Marquette, both, you know, well, I would say offensively and defensively, because, again, they shot the ball so poorly from three. But still, when you get up 20 points on a top 10 team in the country, you're always going to take that. But, you know, I think this is probably about what we can expect, a similar, maybe not margin of victory, margin of loss this dramatic, but I think this is about what we can expect throughout all the Big East season, Phil, is wins on the road are going to be at a premium. I mean, if you can find a way to grab 3 somewhere, I think that'll be great, and then you've got to hold serve at home. You know, you got to win, hopefully 8 and 9 would be awesome, but, you know, you've got to win your home games if you want to be one of the top teams in the Big East, and I think Marquette is capable of that. It's just going to be not getting too low about the road losses, because they're going to come, and then defending home court.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the path to, I mean, we've said, what, 13, maybe 14 wins? So you get the 9 home wins, or say 8 home wins, you know, one thing, you know, you could always have a bad game at home. Then you've got to go and win 5 or 6 on the road, which is not, you know, is not nothing, right? That's a tough ask. But
I mean, 6 seems like a lot, but yeah, if you want to talk about winning the conference championship,
yes,
that's kind of about where you need to be.
Right. And that's the reality. I mean, if we're talking about getting 13 or 14 wins, you've got to win 5 or 6, which is, I get where the Creighton loss, you know, if you say, oh, that's on the road, if there's going to be that much disparity between Marquette at home and Marquette on the road, yeah, they're going to end up an 11 and 7 or a 12 and 6 type team, because they're just not going to have the firepower on the road to overcome some of them. But I mean, the margin of victory aside, I think this week is what I expected and what I like. I'm pleased. I'm not depressed. I'm not overly excited. I'm satisfied with where we're at, right?
Yeah, I'm comfortable, right? Yeah, it would have been nice to not get blown out, but in the end, it's just 1-1. Whether you're, you know, win by 1, lose by 1, or win by 20, lose by 20, Marquette is 1-1, so they're just right in the middle there in the Big East. And at Creighton is a loss you can stomach if you're talking about. If you're targeting maybe 4 or 5 wins on the road, that means about, you know, 4 or 5 losses on the road. and at Creighton is one you could probably stomach. If you're thinking about stealing road wins, you got to think, you know, maybe St. John's, Georgetown, Providence, maybe DePaul are probably those games you're kind of circling. So that may be a spot you can get a road win. Whereas, you know, again, defending home court is easier said than done, but Marquette should go into every home game expecting to win, right?
Like, right.
They, and, you know, for what it's worth, they have not had an undefeated home season under Wojo. It's like, you know, maybe it's something maybe easier said than done, but it's, you know, it is tough to win every home game. You think you might have a slip. Now, granted, there haven't been many spots this year to slip up at home because their toughest games have been on the road or neutral courts. Wisconsin was on the road. Maryland was a neutral court. Creighton was on the road. You know, the only, I would say, losable, truly losable games that were home were Purdue and Villanova. Everything else was a bye game, essentially. But that, I think that is a realistic goal. I think you could kind of, if you're listing goals for this team for the season, I think an undefeated home record is achievable. Certainly not easy. I think, obviously, Butler coming in is the one you kind of look at. Sorry, that's going to be the toughest home win to get. But all the other wins, at all the other games at home, Marquette's probably going to be at least 3-point favorites, if not more.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, do you feel like this win against Villanova was, I mean, we may have a loss down the road, but do you think this was the toughest home game we have on the calendar?
Probably not. Just, I think Butler is a little more solid than Villanova.
Okay.
I think, but like, ask me again, when does Villanova and Villanova goes to Creighton this week, I believe. Yeah, that's the next game. We still got a few weeks before Villanova and Butler hook up. But, you know, Butler's KenPom numbers are just so impressive. I mean, they're fifth in the country right now. So the metrics support that. Villanova, may, as talented as they are, and I think they're going to be right there at the end, but I think they can be a little inconsistent at times. And again, that was, you know, from Villanova's perspective, at Marquette is probably a game you can stomach losing.
Right.
They just kind of got out of sorts, and they just weren't themselves, and they probably went home thinking, that just was not us. Similar to the way Marquette got back from Omaha thinking, that just was not us. And that's kind of what Kobe McEwen said after the game. I saw his interview with John Fan of the Big East Network saying, you know, they were kind of embarrassed about the way they played in Omaha, and they just said, well, that's not us. And, you know, that might not be the last time Marquette says that this year. It's coming back from a road game saying, well, that wasn't us. But I think that's just the way it's going to be in the Big East. But, you know, getting back to kind of my original point, I think that that's kind of the path I'm kind of circling for Marquette. If I'm hoping for 11 or 12 wins to finish kind of in that top third of the Big East, you know, maybe even being contending for a title, yeah, defend home court, so that's 9, and then try to steal 3 or 4 on the road, that gets you a 12 or 13, then I think you're right there among the contenders. So that's kind of the formula. And I think it's achievable. Yeah, it's lofty. It's certainly not going to be easy. But it's a goal that this team can, you know, go in their locker room, go in their practice facility at the Al McGuire Center and say, look, this is a goal. This is something we can do, and it's achievable.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, I agree. It'll be interesting to see. We need a you know, it's, you know, it sounds like a cop out, but we need a couple of more weeks to really determine which team is the more likely Marquette team, the team that beat Villanova or the team that got kind of embarrassed by Creighton. Right, the schedule over the next 2 or 3 weeks will tell us that.
Yeah, so we're facing this week, if we kind of like turn the page, look to the games ahead, perhaps a team that is underachieved on the whole, but I guess it's to be determined if they're truly turning things around, or maybe they've gotten just a little bit of a favorable start to the Big East schedule. That's Providence. You know, they came into Big East play at 7-6 and a dominant win over Texas, and then they beat Georgetown, who I think our concerns over Georgetown were well-founded, Phil, the way Georgetown looked in their first game. You know, Matt McClung wasn't able to play, and they kind of got blown out. Well, not, you know, blown out is fair, but hey, they lost by 16 points to Providence. So Providence beat them, and then Providence went on the road and beat DePaul. Is DePaul a fraud, or just a bad start, or maybe a little of both? I guess we'll learn a little bit more about that as we get into this week. But talking about defending home court, Phil, even if Providence is a better team than maybe we think they are, the metric support that they are, this is a game that you've got to win if you want to be considered one of the stronger teams in the Big East. Providence may not be one of the best teams, but they may not be a terrible team as bad a team as their record suggests they are, but you got to defend home court, and Providence is a team you just have to beat in Milwaukee. Looking at their metrics, they're not great, but I'm trying to maybe separate that a little bit from their last three games because I'm not sure if they've turned it around or maybe it's just kind of been a fortunate, 10, 12 days or so.
I think they very well, confidence, breeds confidence, right? So perhaps they that they're a bit of a character of their schedule of late, right? Playing Georgetown and DePaul, both of whom I think are, I don't know that overrated is right, but they're definitely not as good as people think they are, in my opinion. So they got a bit of a softer schedule coming into the Big East to start, which gave them confidence that maybe they start to believe in themselves. So, perception becomes reality. But to your point, this is a game that Marquette absolutely has to win. This is, quite frankly, the thing that's concerning is Providence at home right now is a quad three loss. So by the metrics, we have to beat Providence to keep those quad three and four losses off the record, right? And I think Marquette can beat Providence. The only thing that gives me any kind of hesitation is that Providence's defense turns team overs at an elite level. They're number six in the country in causing turnovers. Steals anyway. That is not exactly Marquette's strong suit.
Yeah, Marquette is sloppy with the ball, and that's something that's been pretty well documented. So that's a legit concern. I think that's a good thing to point out. Yeah, and Providence's metrics overall, a lot of red numbers in that offensive column. This is not a great offense. I mean, they have two wins, but I mean, they put up 66 to beat DePaul, and they pulled away from an undermanned Georgetown team. So this is a team that Marquette's defense should be able to really shut down. They don't get actually pretty bad in the paint. They don't. Their 2-point percentage is almost as bad as Marquette's. Is it worse? It is.
Just a shade better. Yeah.
A shade better than Marquette, 2-point percentage on the season. 3-point percentage nowhere near Marquette. So, this is a team that struggles offensively. I mean, Alpha Diallo's a great player, but he's not an elite shooter. And he's a guy who's going to look to get to the basket and challenge Theo John. So, kind of laying down the gauntlet for him once again. Yeah, their defense is decent. Your number on the steal percentage is a good point. And turnover percent. Yeah, they do turn teams over at a pretty high rate. The top 30 in the nation as far as forcing turnovers. So, got to take care of the ball. Easy to say here on a podcast, but I think that is honestly, to me, that is the number one and perhaps only realistic path to a loss against Providence is if Marquette is sloppy with the ball and turns it over a lot.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to be interesting. I'm curious to see who guards Alpha Diallo. I suppose it probably going to be Brendan Bailey, Jamal Kane combo. But I could also see probably playing Sakar against him a little bit. A little smaller than Alpha Diallo, but he's much less of a post-up threat, more of a kind of, like you said, he's a slasher. So it'll be interesting to see defensively how Marquette aligns with Providence. But whatever they do, and hopefully Kobe, we didn't really talk about Kobe's game back against Villanova, had for the most part ice water in his veins, at the free throw line late in the game, and did the work, made some shots, was productive, didn't turn the ball over a lot against Villanova. If that's the Kobe McEwen we get the rest of the season, especially against teams like Providence and Seton Hall, I think we'll be all right. But that it remains to see if that was a blip or if Kobe can build on this and do it in the Providence game as well.
Yeah, I would say coming after off a game in which Marquette shot the ball from three as poorly as it did, I'm expecting this to swing the other way coming back this week after a game when Marquette goes 5 of 21 from 3, I think that number is going to be a little bit more what we're used to. I don't know. It's just one of those things. This was just kind of a fluke game. They didn't shoot the ball well, but this is still a team that's top 5. It's currently 3rd in the country in 3-point percentage as a team. So I think that's going to come back the other way. Marquette should hit some outside shots, so I feel good about predicting a home win against Providence. KenPom has it as a 9-point spread, so this is a game that Marquette is certainly expected to win.
Yeah, I think this is a game that I think it's probably a 5 or 6 point game at halftime with a Marquette lead, and then probably at the end of the game, you know, maybe it comes down to, you know, they try and steal some possessions and Marquette makes free throws to extend, but I think it's a relatively solid 12-13 point win at the end.
Yeah. Hoping for a comfortable one there. Then, you know, coming up on Saturday, it is the team that, I don't know if I want to use the word rival or not, but boy, it is a foe that Marquette fans just do not like after the way things went last year, and that's Seton Hall with Miles Powell. Marquette is going to go to Newark, and, you know, we said earlier this is that, you know, road wins in the Big East are going to be tough to come by. This is one I'm pretty nervous about, I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah, I'm nervous about it because I really have, in a relatively short period of time, I mean, let's be honest, I've never been a fan of Kevin Willard much at all, but I, like this Seton Hall team has become a very easily despisable team, you know? Yeah. And, like, I just don't like them and what went down in New York and just, I mean, I've read a couple of articles coming out of the New York area where people are like, yeah, they're, you know, basically they're embracing their inner jerk and that's just kind of the way the team is. And it's like, all right, neat. That sucks. Like, you know, so this is one I kind of, if I'm being honest, of the road games, this is the one I've circled on the calendar that I absolutely want to go out and win.
Oh, believe me, I want to win this game. It's just I'm just pessimistic about it happening. I mean, Seton Hall does have Miles Powell back. Now, they are 2-0, but they're 2-0 in the same way Providence is 2-0 against DePaul and Georgetown. They went on the road and beat DePaul comfortably. Beat them by 8, and then beat, again, Georgetown, which is probably in a bit of a funk right now, by 16 at home. So now they will have Xavier on Wednesday, so they have that to look forward to before they come back home for Marquette. But, you know, yeah, maybe Seton Hall was a tad overrated in the preseason, but, you know, Miles Powell is still about what you would expect. I mean, he's scoring at a high rate. KenPom's got him 10th in his Player of the Year rankings. High volume guy, high usage guy. He's going to shoot a ton, and that Seton Hall is just fine with that. And he has enough talent around him that, you know, Seton Hall's defensive numbers are really good. They're a top 10 team in the country defensively on KenPom. Their offense is good, maybe not elite, but good. It's 55th in the country. That, you know, compared to Marquette, they are just a tad behind. Marquette's 39th. Marquette's got, I guess, good balance as far as KenPom numbers. 39 offense, 36 on defense. Seton Hall, meanwhile, shades more on the defensive side. They're top 10 in the country on defense, as I just said. But opponents' effective field goal percentage is very low. That's 43% in the country when they face Seton Hall. That's top 16 in the country. And then a lot of green numbers on defense as far as three-point percentage, two-point percentage, free throw percentage, blocks. Yeah, Seton Hall actually gets more blocks than Marquette does. Top 15 in the country in blocks. So it's going to be tough getting points at the rim. And again, it's a road game. So I look at this game, yes, I would love to win it. It would be such a moment, like a season momentum builder if you go on the road and beat Seton Hall, because that would be an early statement game as far as, you know, national outlets that consider Seton Hall a top contender in the Big East, that still looks at Seton Hall as a team that could win the Big East if you go into their house and beat them this early in the conference season. Yes, I would love for Marquette to steal this game. I am just pessimistic that they can, because, again, it's a road game, and Seton Hall, I think, is starting to get their groove a little bit.
Yeah, I could see that. I just, for whatever reason, especially with and I'm going to give it a go. Mamu Kalashvili.
Sure.
Yeah, that guy. Especially with him still out. I think Marquette's got the ability to match up against Seton Hall. I have no doubt that it's going to be a very tough game. And certainly willing to accept and not be like devastated if Marquette loses to Seton Hall on the road. But I like the potential matchups, and I think if Marquette brings its A game, I think they win. And I actually think maybe it's wishful thinking, but I think if they truly were embarrassed by that Creighton showing, I think they're going to come fired up and ready to go for a road game on a Saturday against Seton Hall, who, you know, Theo John alone has some cause to be fired up after what happened last week or last year in the Garden. So I feel like Marquette can control the paint and hit from the outside, and I think Seton Hall's a little more, you know, they look better on paper than they actually are. Because I watched that DePaul game, and they were, you know, if DePaul hadn't gone full DePaul, I think Seton Hall would have lost that game. So I think I'm going to call it for a Marquette win. I think Marquette can beat and will beat Seton Hall.
That's optimistic, but you are the optimistic one on this podcast. That's kind of your role. But yeah, I think, you know, if Marquette, as long as Marquette can take care of business and win at home against Providence, and they can, you know, come into this game 2-1. Providence or Seton Hall coming, you know, we'll see what if they get their first loss of the season. If they lose at Xavier on Wednesday, then both teams will be 2-1. So it would be kind of an important game as far as early positioning in the Big East standings. I think there would be a lot of emotion and maybe a little bit of hype heading into this game. Is I think a lot of people would be excited to see a Miles Powell Marcus Howard matchup, and I'm sure Marquette will be up for the game, but it's not always enough. Sometimes the home opponent is up for it just as much as you are, and they play just as well, and who knows, maybe even a friendly whistle it can help you as well when you're the home team. But yeah, so I'm going on the record as far as a prediction and just saying a loss. But maybe it'll be Marquette's first close loss of the year.
Those are moral victories, right? Like those are just as important.
Yeah, KenPom has them as a 5-point dog in this one. So yeah, might be another tough one. But I'll say maybe they lose by 3-4 points.
Okay, that's fair. I think it's going to be an interesting game, to say the least. I don't know. In that one, what do you think of Kelvin Willard as a coach? Do you think he's a good to solid coach?
I think he's fine. He has his moments. Yeah, I think I said about Wojo before. Maybe not a great coach, maybe not a bad coach, but a coach, a guy who can win games when he has a lot of talent. And I think he has quite a bit of talent this season. I think he recruits all right, but there are some times where they've had some pretty rough showings. They've had some pretty rough seasons as well. So he has his ups and his downs. I certainly wouldn't put him as one of the elite coaches in the country by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't think he's a terrible coach either.
I think he's an okay coach. For all we know, he and Wojo may be on the same level, but even Wojo in his limited moments is eminently more likable in my book than Kevin Willard is.
Easy for us to say as Marquette fans, but yes, I would agree.
Yeah, I don't know. That guy just rubs me the wrong way.
Just a lot of bitterness between Marquette and Seton Hall over the last couple of years, especially last season, the way some of those games went. And I think both teams want their guy to be a little higher in the National Player of the Year or Big East Player of the Year. Maybe National Player of the Year is a little step too far, but as far as Big East Player of the Year, both teams want their guy to have a leg up there, right? It's, that's the battle within the battle, and maybe not something those guys are necessarily thinking about before winning the game, but it's not like Marcus Howard doesn't know who Miles Powell is and Miles Powell doesn't know who Marcus Howard is. They're both going into this game thinking, I'm going to outshow this guy. I'm going to show out against this guy. I'm going to put on a show, and I'm going to score more, and I'm going to lead my team to a win. And hopefully that puts me in the lead in the Big East Player of the Year race. And if I'm ahead of this guy in the Big East Player of the Year race, I'm more likely to be an All-American, first-team All-American.
Yeah. It will be interesting because I think both Miles Powell and Marcus Howard, I mean, I obviously individually they are, but I think this could be a game where you have the two premier players on the team both going for like 35 or 40 points, right? Like
I think that's like what most like the average fan would just love to see is just a back and forth. Can you top this battle between Powell and Howard? Is each team goes down the floor, gets it to their guy, and he bombs a three, and then the other one goes down and does pretty much the same thing, and they go back and forth for most of the second half until it comes down to a final shot, and one of them hits a shot to win the game. Like, that's what I think that's what like a neutral fan would want to see is those two just can you top this?
Yeah, for sure. Well, and this game, so the Villanova game was on quote unquote Big Fox. I think this one will probably be on FS1, I would think. But I meant to ask you, how did obviously I was at the game. How was the Big Fox representation of the game? Who were the analysts, and did they have any? You know, we talked about the national attention for Marquette or the lack thereof. What came out of that?
I thought Marquette came off fine. It definitely appeared loud. It was a sellout crowd, which I know, which is always good. And I think it appeared that way. It was certainly. Looked like a fun environment to be in. I mean, the television team, I think it's my favorite Fox team, honestly. It was Brian Anderson on play-by-play, and I hope I'm saying his name right, Nick Bae on the color analyst. I think he's one of their better TV analysts, honestly, and I think his analysis is really good. So I am far less critical of broadcast teams than most people. I feel like most people say, God, this guy's an idiot for like every person out there, and like everyone sucks who is behind a microphone. Like, you've got to be just really annoying and terrible for me to just really hate you as a play-by-play or color analyst. So, but I didn't notice anything overly negative about either one, and I've heard Brian Anderson call games several times, like basketball and baseball. I think he's one of the best in the business, honestly. So I enjoy it when Brian Anderson calls Marquette games. And so, I enjoyed the overall television presentation. I had no gripes about it.
Yeah, well, and Brian Anderson's kind of, I don't know that I would go so far as to call him a hometown boy, but I mean, he cut his teeth in Milwaukee with the Brewers, covering, doing radio and some of the TV stuff. He was on, you know, he was on Fox Sports Wisconsin all the time, covering the team for TV and whatnot with Craig Kishon, I think was the color guy there. But anyway, yeah, I was just curious, like, where the discussions went at all, you know, because, I don't know. I just feel like the Big East is generally being underrepresented for how good the conference generally is, the collective of teams. Again, it feels like it's not really in much of the discussion.
I would say, like, college basketball in general is not much of a discussion right now. Like, we need football to end for, like, there to be a true college basketball discussion. Like, I mean, the only people who discuss basketball are those who, like, have podcasts where it is a college basketball-specific podcast, like us. But, like, as far as, like, you know, on what's, like, not that I watch these shows, but what's on Get Up or whatever the one on Fox is, like, it's all football, which I get, and NBA, which I get. You got to appeal to the masses in that regard. But, yeah, I think for there to actually be more of a discussion about college basketball, we need football to end. And it's almost there. But, you know, obviously college football just has one game left. But, yeah, I do. Thing is, I think the big discussion nationally is who the, like, there's always discussion of who is the best team, and I think that's the most confusing thing right now. But and I think maybe that's where the Big East is a little lacking, is there's not really a team in the discussion as the nation's best team. So, like, you've got, like, maybe, what, six, seven teams that have been ranked number one this season. None of them are Big East teams, and maybe you got to go four or five more before you actually get to a Big East team, and that's when you get to Butler or Villanova. So I think just having, yeah, I think, you know, the Big East has a lot of good teams, but does it have a Final Four contender? I don't know. Maybe Butler is. I some people may still think Seton Hall is, and there's still a chance Villanova could be a team that makes a deep March run. I'm not sure, but there are probably about 10 teams or so that most people would bring into the best team in the country discussion before they get to a Big East team. So that may be hurting the league in that regard. But I think there are probably 3, 4, 5 teams that are worthy of top 25 or top 20 discussion right now. So maybe a little under-discussed, but I think you could say that for the majority of college basketball.
Yeah, that's probably fair. It just seems that, you know, the ACC and the Big Ten and are kind of the primary. And then you get a little bit SEC just because of the SEC football bleed over. But it's just an interesting time because you're right that there is so little oxygen for college basketball generally, which seems a shame because, you know, and it, this is a whole other discussion, but it really makes an argument for do you change the college basketball schedule? And, you know, the half the season takes place in the middle of football season, and it kind of gets lost in the wash.
Yeah, and you know, CBS would die before it gives up March Madness. So, like, they don't want to have to change it to May Madness. But who knows? That may be a discussion someone has to have later, because it does get half the season does get overshadowed, and that's long been the case, and that's long been the struggle. I will say maybe another big picture issue with college basketball this season is that it doesn't have a Zion, and it doesn't have Trae Young the year before that. It doesn't have like a lot of the best NBA prospects are either out or not in college basketball at all right now. Like, you know, James Wiseman left Memphis, LaMelo Ball and RJ Hampton are in New Zealand, Australia. Cole Anthony is out right now, and it's to be determined if he's going to come back. Anthony Edwards is on an average Georgia team. They beat Memphis this week, but still, I'm not sure Georgia's a tournament team. And then, you know, you've got Peyton Pritchard's all the way out west. Anybody on the West Coast kind of gets ignored because all their games are on so late. And then you got Miles Powell and Marcus Howard in the Big East, who, you know, Big East is going to get overlooked a little bit nationally because they're on Fox and not ESPN. So, I think maybe a little bit of a lack of star power in college hoops this year is maybe hurting the discussion as well. Because if they, like, again, Zion drove the discussion last year because he was like nothing anybody had seen in a while. And then Trae Young was so crazy the year before that. He was, you know, he generated a lot of discussion. No one is generating quite a discussion like that right now.
Yeah, I think that's right. There's not really much to move the needle. I think it's really been the dominant story seems to be no one wants to be number one, right? Like, you know, so it's kind of a negative story is the number one story in college basketball right now. So, I mean, I think that just it just goes to show that Marquette's got some runway here, but they've also got to go, you know, they've got to go win some games. I think beating Villanova in a national broadcast helps get Marcus some more visibility and win a couple of games here and the attention will come probably.
Yeah, I think, there are a lot of writers who live in the greater New York area, which is why maybe Seton Hall gets a little more pub than is deserved. They're a good team, but I think the way they've been hyped as a Final Four team may be a bit much. But if he can go to Newark and beat Miles Powell and have a better game than Miles Powell, I think you may see, especially because it would then be right at the end of the college football season, the Marcus Howard national love crank up a notch.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So potentially big... big boost for Marcus Howard this week, and a big boost for Marquette as a team. Okay, but that's the most important thing, is just going in and winning. Even if Marcus Howard scores 0 points, if they can just get the win, I think we would all take that. And one other note, I don't know if it's even a note, I have nothing on it right now, but Kareem Manet did, by the way, I've been saying his name wrong, it's not Kareem Main, it's Kareem Manet, as Al Mikowski pointed out to me. He did take his official visit, he was on campus. I have not seen any articles or tweets or Instagram posts of it or anything like that from his visit, but I guess for those of you who follow recruiting, maybe something to keep an eye on over the next few weeks to see if he announces any other official visits, any other plans to visit any other schools, because right now there are no other schools that he is planning to visit. There are several that are recruiting him and would like to get official visits, but there are none scheduled. So we'll kind of see what his next step is. I'm just curious. The recap of the recruiting visit is always the same for every kid at every school. It's always, it was great. It was a family vibe. Everybody showed lots of love while I was there. I really enjoyed it, and I can see myself there. You know, that's kind of the official visit recap for every recruit ever. What I'm more curious is what he says is next. Is he exploring NBA draft options even more and looking more towards the pros? Because he is one that is, again, I've said it before, he's draft eligible. He's old enough, and he's been in school long enough. Or is he planning another visit? And I want to see who those visits are. If it's Kentucky and Michigan State, then maybe you get a little nervous that you're losing him. If it's programs a little more on par with where Marquette is nationally, then maybe think, oh, well, we got a shot here. So that's kind of what I'm curious to see, is what his next step is. So whenever anyone writes an article about how his visit went, I'm not so much interested in it as did he like it or was love shown, because I know what those answers are going to be. I'm interested in what's next for him.
I mean, I think the atmosphere was outstanding for the game.
Yeah, you could have had a better atmosphere.
Like, right.
You got to say that. I mean, as far as, like, the results of a game really should not determine whether you get a kid or not, but it has to help when the team plays well, beats a top-10 opponent in front of a sellout crowd. I mean, Wojo could not have scripted that weekend any better, really.
Yeah, for sure. So, you're right. It really, and I mean, he's not going to sign till the spring signing period. So, we're not going to hear anything anytime soon, I don't think.
I don't think so either. I mean, a verbal commitment would be amazing, but I am not anticipating that anytime soon.
Right. So, we'll see. We'll keep our eyes on it. I mean, I would expect, the spring signing period is April, so he's probably going to go on a few more visits here till the quiet period in late February, early March.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume so. I mean, if he doesn't take another visit, then you got to think it's a done deal. Considering how many schools are recruiting him and he has visits available to him, I would assume, and I would even dare say encourage him to take some other visits and see what else is out there for him. So that's what I would assume, is he's probably choosing his next official visits.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Let's see. Is there anything else we want to touch on before we wrap this thing up, Phil?
The only thing I want to throw out there, and I referenced it earlier, just out of curiosity, I don't know if I know you saw some of the post-game stuff. Wojo comes in with a little bit of personality after that Villanova win, and what it made me ask, why doesn't Wojo have more personality? Like, why is he such a bland coach speak kind of guy?
I think it's just the way he's always been. I mean, I don't know if a guy is just reserved by nature. You can't make him, Al McGuire, Jim Valvano type guy. This is not who he is. And he's been around Coach K his whole life, his whole professional life. And, Coach K is not exactly, a class clown up there when he's at press conferences either. He's always kind of reserved and, just says what needs to be said, more or less. So probably got that from his mentor. So I would not expect Wojo to go that far out of his shell. But, a couple of people have pointed that out, that, when things are going well, Wojo's pretty funny. He's like, he's subtle about it, and he'll make a nice little joke here or there. And it's just like, I would say, like, most people who are viewed as reserved or quiet are also viewed as funny by their closest friends and family. Like, I even think of, like, myself that way sometimes. Like, people who don't know me may think I may not say much, but people who hang around me a lot, they find me funny at times and, like, think I'm a little more outgoing, but I could see Wojo being that, especially because, like, I could totally understand where Wojo's coming from as far as being funny when you're winning and being boring when you're losing, because I could totally understand in our social media world, in our message board world, of like, if he's cracking jokes after a 20-point loss, people are like, oh, is you serious? You're going to make that joke after you just got boat raised? I mean, does this guy even care? I mean, I can understand, like, not wanting to be funny all the time, but than letting the personality come out when things are going well a little bit. So, I totally get Wojo's personality. I really do. If you're not like super outgoing, the type who would like stand in front of a bar of strangers and just be hilarious, you can't force that. That's just not who he is. But yeah, that's just my take on Wojo's personality, is that I totally get it.
Yeah, I just the only reason I bring it up is I feel like that's one of the things that, for whatever reason, there is seemingly, at least on the internet anyway, a vocal, I'm going to go so far as to say minority, of fans that just seem to not like Wojo. And a lot of times it seems to be pinned on, well, he's just not a good coach. And I'm like, I don't know that we have enough evidence to say one way or the other whether he's a good or a bad coach. So the vitriol's got to come from somewhere else. And it strikes me that, like, Wojo, he's not dislikable, but he's also not necessarily consistently likable, right? Like, he's just a guy and a coach that exists.
He's got a Tim Duncan like personality sometimes, right? Like Tim Duncan was like never like super funny or outgoing, or you know, he just says what needs to be said in press conferences, and that's just kind of his personality. And I think also Marquette fans definitely got used to Buzz, who had a personality, right? And he just embraced and just loved to play that dumb hick personality and also be kind of funny and silly at times and tell these long stories that make you say, wow, that was kind of deep and kind of insane, Buzz. Thanks for sharing all that with us. So it is a different dynamic as far as a coach's personality from what maybe the previous regime was, but I don't need my coach to be a clown necessarily. I don't need him to be hilarious.
What?
It's nice if he, Craig. Yeah, but I don't care.
Right.
Like,
well,
I don't
even mean it like that. He's got to be hysterical or be a jokey joker, right? Like, I just, like, he needs to be, I don't know. I just feel like Marquette's got a long line of notable, I'll say, personalities, right? Like, you accurately described Buzz. Crean was a personality. Obviously, Al McGuire was.
Crean's probably, if only Crean was at Marquette when, like, there was more social media and more memes, I think there would be a lot more out of him from his Marquette days.
Yeah, for sure.
But I get what you're saying.
I think it's the first time, like, as Marquette fans, where we have a coach that is just kind of a coach. Right, and there's nothing wrong with it, but I think that's part of the weirdness that people are trying to adjust to.
Yeah, I think when people get tired of complaining about on-court stuff, they decide they want to complain about those things. And ultimately, all people want is a winner. Like Belichick and Belichick especially, but I would say Saban as well, are pretty boring on the mic. And I would dare say Belichick is quite an ass. If Bill Belichick was an 8-8 coach every year, would his shtick at press conferences of 3-word answers be even half as charming as it seems? Like, people, yeah, exactly. Like, exactly. All people want is a winner, and if you're winning, they forgive and don't care about anything else.
Right. Right. Well, because that's like even Coach K is, you know, he says some stuff. He's very dry, but he says stuff he's kind of being a dick. But again, when you've got that many national championships, you can get away with it.
Exactly. So, yeah, I guess just to wrap up the Wojo personality discussion. Yeah, would I love some funnier moments at press conferences if I'm looking for something to complain about? Sure. But he has his funny moments occasionally, but only when the team's winning. So basically I would like more just because that would mean Marquette's winning more. So So maybe hopefully 2 wins this week and we'll get more funny press conference moments. I think the funniest thing he said was to, John Fanta after the Big East Network interview. He's like, any recommendations? And he's like, real chilly late at night, 3 a.m. I think you guys should stay out all night before the before the game against Providence.
Yeah, well, and the other one that was really funny was, and for some folks that aren't the local sports fans, so the Bucks and the Packers, Wojo was at the Bucks game the night after the night of the Villanova game, and going back at least a year now, at least a season, multiple notable Packers have been on the Jumbotron, and it started with David Bakhtiari chugging not only a beer, two beers on the Jumbotron in like 3 seconds, which was followed up a couple of weeks later by Aaron Rodgers barely being able to swallow a beer. But anyway, Wojo was on the Jumbotron at the Bucks game, stood up and chugged his water bottle. So, I mean, again, the guy's got jokes. He's got a personality. I sometimes wish he'd let it out a little bit more. But c'est la vie, as long as we win, I don't care.
Yeah, I'm with you there. By the way, Bakhtiari's chugging ability is impressive. Kind of reminds me. Remember that guy, the Fox, who could chug two beers in 2 seconds, like one gulp. Quite amazing, but. Yeah, I'm very impressed by that. But I did not see the video of Wojo's water chug, but it sounded hilarious.
Oh, yeah, it was good stuff. I'll have to get it onto Twitter somehow one of these days.
Very good, very good. So to wrap up on the record predictions this week, I'm going 1-1. I say a relatively comfortable win against Providence, so maybe like a 10-point win, and I'll say a tight loss in Newark on Saturday. To Seton Hall.
I'm gonna take my highly accurate prediction last week, and I'm going to roll it forward, and I'm gonna say 2-0 this week.
Oh boy,
I'm calling it.
Two wins this week would be very exciting. That would just, yeah, you go into Newark and beat Miles Powell. That I think that might generate some a little bit of a national buzz, but we'll see how that goes. But so I'm going with 1-1, and I would be fine with that because again, I think road wins are gonna be tough to come by in the Big East, and. But if you can get a few, get three, you know, four or five, then things could be looking really good. But got to defend that home court, so we'll see how Marquette does this week. As always, folks, we appreciate your feedback, and thank you for listening. You can reach out to us on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. Go to cracksidewalks.com. We post the podcast there. You can leave your comments where we post them, and you can also go to the Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. We have that as well. Please go to Apple Podcast, rate, review, and subscribe. Any final thoughts, Phil?
Nope. Let's just get some wins and make Wojo crack jokes.
Let's be funny. Seashells and Maloons, everyone.